Good afternoon, and thanks for tuning in to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. In studio with me this week is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. We should point out we have pre-taped this week's program, so unfortunately we cannot take your phone calls, but we'd still like you to email us questions for any of our four mayors. That email address is ask@wbaa.org. You can also tweet your questions to @WBAAnews on Twitter. Well, it seems appropriate to start with kind of the news of the hour, if you will. What are your general impressions of election night?
Well, actually, I thought that it was interesting. We had a lot of candidates that were running for office that brought a real diverse set of experiences to the positions they were running for. I always feel that change is good. You know, change is as good as the rest, as they say. And I think that we're going to see a significant amount of change throughout local government here in the next few years.
What about on the state front, where there really was not a lot of change? We knew, I think, 6 months ago that all nine Congress people were likely to be reelected, and sure enough, they were. And I think there are some people who are probably genuinely worried about the fact that you've got all of these districts that are very, very safe, and that the gridlock we've seen for the last couple of years is going to continue, if not get worse, for the next two.
This is true. It seems a little interesting to how we've sort of shifted societally. It used to be that the citizens selected their elected officials. In some cases now, it seems with gerrymandering of districts and whatnot, that the elected officials are selecting their citizens, which seems a little backwards. Another thing that seems to be interesting to me is that in elected office, there's no doubt that there is a lot of stress. There's no doubt that it's a very public position. There's no doubt that, you know, what you do well, you get a lot of attention for, and what you do not so well, you get even more attention for. And I think at some level that inhibits some really good people from running for office. And oftentimes when I'm walking around talking to the folks in West Lafayette, I often say, hey, you know, you would be a real asset to our community. Why don't you consider running for office? And to a soul, it seems like the answer that I get every time is, oh, I'd love to. I'd love the job, but I just don't want to have to campaign for it. You know, I can't imagine making public speeches. I can't imagine going door to door. I can't imagine doing some of the things that you elected folks do. And it's unfortunate because there are some really great people in this community that could really offer a lot to help keep us going in the right direction. And it's unfortunate that that process has become so toxic in some cases that we don't really get the greatest people that there are out there to run for office.
Is it your impression that people are afraid of public scrutiny in the job, for better or for worse?
I think so. I don't think it's because they have some sort of skeleton in their closet. But I think that when you work in the private sector, you know, oftentimes the work that you do, whether it's creating a cure for cancer or whether it's putting a hubcap on a tire, it's done with an understanding that you'll do the best that you can. And if there needs to be some sort of corrective guidance provided, it's done within the parameters of your position. In other words, it's not going to be a headline on a newspaper. It's not going to be the lead story on television. And in public office, you know, mistakes, whether they be intended or accidental, oftentimes are what lead stories are all about. And I say that with experience because I've messed up a lot in my political career. And you guys have been very gracious about how you've handled that. But the fact of the matter is I think that people nowadays realize that, you know, you are just one snap of a cell phone away or one quick tweet away from having a lot of exposure to something that you didn't intend to happen.
So let me ask a few questions about how these things are going to affect you. The Republicans now hold a 40-10 advantage in the state Senate after the election, and they now will hold 71 of the 100 House seats. Both of those are supermajorities, of course. How do you think that'll affect municipal governments in the next 2 years, especially as we get set to try to write another budget here in January?
Well, one of the fears that I've always had is that we in local government try to do the best we can with every penny that we get through tax. I mean, we're very conscientious about spending other people's money. And the last polling that was done, and I couldn't give you the year that it was done, but local government was considered to be one of the most efficient forms of government. We're held directly accountable. You know, if I don't pick up somebody's trash or if I don't see that their streets get plowed, I am made acutely aware of that, and we try and do what we can to make that, to solve those sort of problems. So my concern is that with the austerity movement, with the understanding that tax dollars in some particular cases are felt to be almost a crime, I'm fearful that some of that revenue is going to have an adverse impact on our ability to provide services. And I know that there's always the best of intentions. I don't think any elected official comes into office with malice of intent. I think everybody believes that what they're doing is exactly what needs to be done for the greater good, as I do. But I do believe in some instances, decisions can be made higher up the food chain that have an adverse impact on those of us that are actually trying to provide services on a daily basis with restrictive budgets.
I should say that even though we're talking about slightly larger majorities now in both houses of the state legislature, it's not unlike the last couple of years. And so this is an environment that is probably similar in a lot of ways to what you've sort of already gotten used to. And I guess the worry that I've heard over the last 24 hours is, will Republicans either within the state house or nationally overreach? That's the word you keep seeing, overreaching. And frankly, I've studied politics for a long time. I don't actually know what that word means. I submit to you it has many, many different meanings. But what's your sense of that? Do you think there would be the temptation at least to overreach, whatever that means?
I can tell you what I think and I can tell you what I hope. Obviously, the first thing is what I hope. I hope not. I hope not. But again, when an individual is elected, the presumption is they're representing the majority of the citizens that they serve. And when you look at things on the state or national level, that majority can be a very small number. And that collective thought can be very liberal or very conservative. And one would hope that there would be a broadening of understanding of what actually that greater good is comprised of. I hope that there isn't any significant changes in how we do business. I would hope that what we've been doing here locally, I mean, look at what we've done locally. We've got two political parties represented at the executive level for both cities. We get along great. We have partnerships. We share resources. We do things because we both believe very strongly in making this the best community in the state of Indiana, both sides of the river being included. And I believe we've taken great steps to get there. We are one of the target points in the state of Indiana. People really enjoy Greater Lafayette, and they come here en masse. And it's because of the spirit of cooperation that we have. And I would hope that there wouldn't be a philosophy, whether it be at the state level or whether it be at the national level, of I'm going to do something to him or her before they do it to me. Or they were in the majority in the past and they treated me this way, so now's my time to get back at them. Because that's not public service. That actually is the opposite of public service. That's very selfish and self-serving.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're chatting with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. Today's program has been pre-recorded, so we can't take your phone calls, but please do send us your questions via email. ask@wbaa.org is the email address. You've already said on this program that you plan to run for re-election next year, and I wondered about the turnout, because this year's turnout was only 30%. I would assume you'd want more people than that taking part next year. How do you do that? How do we get people to be interested?
You know, I've given that a great deal of thought. We've tried to make the voting process as easy as possible. You know, we've tried to make it so that you can vote early. We've tried to make it so that you can vote at several locations throughout the county. There's the way that it used to be when I first started voting years and years ago. I mean, there was time, there was documentation required, and you had to fit your schedule into the times that the offices were open. And those days are long gone, thankfully so. But I think what has to happen is people need to understand that they are not just selecting a person. It's not just a beauty contest. You're trying to put somebody into office that's going to represent, generally speaking, what you feel is politically important. And that requires a degree of involvement. And again, hats off to the media. You guys do a great job of trying to put as much information about the candidates as possible. But there needs to be a sense of ownership. There needs to be an understanding that these are public servants that are being selected through a democratic process that are going to be held to the standard that you are generally responsible for. Because the other end is if turnout keeps on getting less and less because people are apathetic and they say all elected officials alike, no matter who goes in there, they're, you know, not going to be any good. They're not going to be responsive to what I want, so I don't care. We're going to fail as a country if we have that sort of philosophy. Because, you know, I've been around people, and I'm not trying to boast, but I've been around national figures as well as local figures. And regardless of which side of the spectrum they're on, they genuinely care about trying to make this a better place in which to live. But they can't do that without having a process that's inclusive. Our voting process has to be more inclusive. We have to make sure that people can get out, get into the polling areas, and vote. And my fear is that it will be getting down to the point where that people are being elected into significant political positions with a very small portion of the population representing that electorate.
I've wondered a lot about the idea of making voting easier. And you mentioned we've now got early voting and we've now got vote centers in this county and in 15 others. So you can vote anywhere you want, any of those vote centers. Mm-hmm. It was easy for me to come to work yesterday and mm-hmm. cast my ballot on mm-hmm. campus here, despite the fact it's, you know, 3 miles from where I live. Mm-hmm. But I wonder, do we need to go to extraordinary measures? Is it time to, you know, is it almost nuclear option time on we have to get more people voting somehow? Do you need to make Election Day a holiday? Do you need to have incentives for companies to have their employees get a special dispensation to go and vote? Do we need to think way, way outside the box? Because it seems like the box has either shrunk, mm-hmm. disappeared, or changed so drastically we don't recognize it anymore.
Well, that absolutely. And with technology now, you know, there are things that, believe me, you know, I'm a child that was born in the 50s, and, you know, the fact that I can turn my computer on in the morning is a good day for me. But I know that there's technology out there that is very unique and very specific to the user, to the point where it creates its own ID. And one would think that the folks, you know, like the kids that are over at the Anvil and the folks that are working here at Purdue, that there is a way to make a unique identifier that would empower you to be able to cast your vote so that you could do it from home. You could do it from on the road. And again, the technology, I believe, exists. And therefore, if people have the app or have whatever it is that would be required for that, then there would be an incentive to have more people vote. If you could vote from home, you know, and again, make sure that it's that person and that everything is above board. The
registration process. So it seems like what you're saying is the technology hasn't caught up with the process.
Correct. Well, the technology hasn't been applied to try and solve the problem. Because I think that we have resources out there that could be utilized to get that taken care of. If we can bank and spend money and write checks and everything else online, the assumption is that we could conceivably create a system that would have the necessary integrity and security that we could do our voting process with the same level of understanding that it would be valid.
Do you think, based on the fact that there are billions of dollars of electronic transactions that go on every single day in pretty much every country in the world, mm-hmm. do you think that the fears that some have espoused, that they are worried about the sanctity of the votes and they're worried about voter fraud, is that just poppycock? Should we get rid of that argument right now?
I wish we could, but you never can. You know, if there's a human involved, there's the potential for something going wrong. But the fact of the matter is that if we look at, you know, nothing is, as they say, fail safe. There's always something that can happen. But I guess you would have to weigh it against having, you know, 15% voter turnout. You know, how horrific is that? How big of a problem is that? That's pretty substantial, if you ask me. You know, I know as an elected guy, I want to know that I'm representing a majority of my community. I feel comfort in the fact knowing that I was selected by the people that I serve. You know, it would make me very uncomfortable to think that I'm serving a small minority of my community and that my agenda needs to be driven by a group that might not have the best interest of the entire community in heart.
So what about local elected officials like you and your opponent next year, Tony Rozworski, his opponent next year? Is there anything that local officials can do to get people more involved? And is that even your job?
Well, yes, it is our job. You know, I honestly believe that we as elected officials need to make sure that the process is substantial, that the process is to the point now where, you know, dramatic headlines aren't what get people to pay attention or to know who a candidate is. You know, it should be qualification driven. You know, there should be more visibility of what the candidates are bringing to the table. There should be a greater sense of understanding of what these jobs are in a position to do. You know, mayors, and again, not trying to sound self-serving, have a lot of authority. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that mayors can do within a community, some of which is done without a public process. So there needs to be an understanding that whomever it is that they choose to select, that it's a person that's going to fulfill the needs of the job and have the integrity and skill set to be able to do a good job.
I try to tell people, both on this program and whenever I talk to them about the political process, because I realize that I'm in a bubble, that I get to cover things in a very different way that other people get to consume information. And so I try to get outside of that bubble and tell people, when you have a municipal election like the one that's coming up next year, mm-hmm. in my mind, that is tremendously more important than a congressional election. Mm-hmm. It affects me way more who my mayor and my city council are than who my representative in Washington is. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, do you think that because the gridlock in Washington gets all of the press, that will unnecessarily turn people off from voting in next year's races for whomever they want to vote?
Well, I believe so, because, I mean, when you look at, and again, it's been a few years since I've seen what the most recent poll says, but they evaluate jobs, and they have politicians at down there with used car salesmen, and, I mean, used to be lawyers, kind of ran the bottom of the list. Now it's elected officials, which is unfortunate, because what does that tell you? It tells you that immediately by title, you're judged at having less than, you know, a significant degree of integrity.
I have a feeling the media is shrinking on that list as well, unfortunately. Well,
welcome aboard. It's a big boat. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is sometimes we are our own worst enemies. You know, sometimes, you know, elected officials do an amazing job of making fools of themselves and do a horrible job at providing services and things that people really need. And, you know, in a society where reality TV has more viewership than national news, you know, you got to wonder, have we shifted where we're focusing?
People do not sit down to watch Walter Cronkite anymore.
You took the words right out of my mouth. When I was a kid, you know, if we, you know, Dad would come home, we'd have dinner at 5:15, the news would come on at 5:30. And we weren't allowed to talk during the news because that's when Dad got to catch up on the news. Now, obviously, he was allowed to talk because he commented all the time, but us little kids had to sit there and eat dinner, you know? We've shifted. We've changed. You know, we commit the society now because of technology and because the access to information is completely across the board. It's different.
So I was thinking also about the pure numbers, and I asked Krista Coffey yesterday while she was tallying votes and making sure everything was going smoothly. I said, how many people are even registered in the county? And she said, a little more than 100,000. And so I looked up the population from the Census Bureau, and it turns out that there are something like 144,000 eligible voters in this county, and there are 100,000 registered voters. So you're talking about a third of the electorate is not even registered in Tippecanoe County. It seems like there's got to be not a get-out-the-vote effort, but a get-your-butt-to-the-clerk's-office effort to register to vote. And I was pondering why people would not register. And I've heard people in the past say, well, I don't want to have jury duty, so I don't register to vote. And I have to hold myself back and go, you should be doing both of those things. But is there a necessity to get people to be registered first so that at least they have the voter card sent to their house and there's at least a once a year reminder of, oh, yeah, this is something I can do?
It never ceases to amaze me how much we take for granted in this country. My wife became a citizen just shortly after 9/11, back in 2001. And one of the first things she did was register to vote. Now, again, she used the argument that whomever I vote for, she's going to vote, you know, against, jokingly, of course, I hope. But the fact of the matter is that she was so honored to have such an amazing privilege to participate in the electoral process here in the United States. We have lost that sense of focus, I think, you know. And again, you might be a little young to remember this, but there was a huge emphasis on trying to get people to vote back in the late 60s, early 70s. And one of the icons that I remember from that generation is they had two fingers holding a peace symbol with the center part being an American flag, but it was a circular iteration of the American flag, and then the word vote underneath it. And the intent of that was to draw attention to the youth of America in those days, to get them encouraged and excited and enthusiastic about voting.
Granting, of course, you had an event in the Vietnam War that caused a lot of people to want to go to the polling place, if only to spite the people who they felt had gotten them into the situation they didn't want to be in.
Well, and that philosophy, I think, has grown into what's happened today with the apathy. Instead of it, I want to get that guy into office, it's now like they're all rotten. I'm not even going to participate anymore. And again, there couldn't be anything more irresponsible. I mean, what would happen if voter turnout ended up in the single digits? You know, who would we have?
Well, we were awful close in May.
Man, oh man, I know. But who would we have running stuff? You know, who would be the person in charge? You know, if we completely surrender that all of our forefathers fought for, that right to be able to select your representatives, if we surrender that because of apathy, what are we going to turn into?
It just caused me to think of voters like the story of the ancient philosopher walking through the streets with a lantern searching for an honest man and maybe not being able to come up with one to run for office, it sounds like.
Well, and we do this here in West Lafayette. We have a lot of public input. We when we do big stuff, we try and make sure that we have some sort of public forum on it so that we can get people's attitudes and opinions about what we're trying to do. And that process is more engaging. We get more people to turn out for that. Then from what I understand, then who turn out to vote. I mean, people have no problem at all making sure that we as a collective elective body represent our folks well. And then when we have our council meetings, and if you've ever been to one, they're pretty open. I like to say they're pretty freewheeling because we encourage that dialogue back and forth. And to me, that is one of the greatest representations of the democratic process that we have. Local government serving a local community, getting the input, getting the exchange, you know, and I act as the moderator, making sure people behave and act nice. But it really does help us make empowered decisions to do what we believe the right thing is for our community. That's what it's all about, man. That is exactly what we do best. And if we surrender that, if the doors are closed and the people are on the outside and there's a few elected, and I'm quoting parenthetically here, elected officials that are behind that closed door making decisions for the greater population that don't represent that greater population, we've lost.
I also got to thinking about the debates or the lack thereof in this cycle. It seemed like there were far fewer to cover this election cycle than perhaps there have been in the past. And I was led to, frankly, what is a crackpot idea that I will now pose to you, which is, you're a student of history, so am I. I got to thinking all the way back to the Lincoln-Douglas debates 150, 160 years ago. Two guys literally standing on tree stumps, going along throughout the entire state of Illinois, debating and debating and debating many, many times. And now it's hard for us to get one debate between Todd Rokita and John Dale. And I wondered, if we were to, here at WBAA next year, cover the mayoral races here, Lafayette, Delphi, Monticello, Crawfordsville, Frankfort, and we had, honest to goodness, issue-oriented debates, several of them between each candidate, A, do you think people would sign up? Would you sign up to be a part of it since you're running for re-election? And do you think it'd be a way to get people to actually hear things from the candidates rather than find them out through social media, through whatever lens it comes to them?
I think the biggest challenge that people have about debates, and I would say both participants and moderators, is trying to get responses that actually answer the question. And, you know, I think it would be awesome, you know, if we could have that level of intensity on the part of the candidates. But remember what I said earlier about it, you know, the beauty contest concept. Oftentimes a candidate, the only thing they have to do is be popular. They don't have to have any substance. And when you have a candidate that's popular but not substantive, again, they might look good on money, but they don't look good in office. And a debate sometimes is all predicated, the quality of the debate is predicated on the questions. And so if somebody says to Tony or I, okay, what do you want to do as mayor? Well, you might as well go ahead and pack a lunch because we can talk to that indefinitely because that's kind of what we do. But if you were
I'm talking about issue-oriented debates. So we talk about – we spend an hour or a half an hour talking about municipal spending priorities, something that's really substantive, and you confine it to just that for a half an hour and you make it quick back and forth, 60-second or 90-second answers, and you get people in local government, you get people in the media, you get concerned citizens, the League of Women Voters. You go out and you ask people also what they want to know about. So you get lots of ideas and then you confine it to a single issue debate. And you say, this is something that the people tell us that they believe is going to matter in the next 4 years. Do you think we could get people to participate in that? And I'll ask you again, would you participate in such
a thing? Oh, yeah, absolutely. I would. Absolutely. But my thing is that level of participation has to start at the get-go. I mean, it has to start with trying to get the validation on what the critical issues are. And what always concerns me about that is that it's like a funnel. It starts big and small, or else it starts small And then we have to make something big out of something that might have.
Well, but I think for all of the different cities we have in our area, let's confine it, for instance, to the four cities that are mm-hmm. represented on this program. I always tell people nothing happens in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. If something is going on in West Lafayette, there's a really good chance there's an analog in Crawfordsville or Frankfort. Mm-hmm. These things do not happen by themselves.
Right.
Municipal spending is something that is a big issue in all of these communities. None of you has this giant fountain of money that you can spend. And you've got issues like property tax revenue and things like that that are going mm-hmm. to affect all of your budgets for the next 4 years. Guaranteed. Mm-hmm. We could have this sort of debate with the mayors, with the mayoral candidates. Mm-hmm. And trust me, I want to ask tough questions of all of you like I try to do on this program. Mm-hmm. And I believe the folks at the newspaper do, and I believe the folks at the television station do. The problem is there's been a reticence on the part of the candidates to do anything but sit on their thumbs the last couple of election cycles. And I'm not accusing you of that personally, and I'm not accusing any particular candidate of it. I'm mm-hmm. saying it's become the way of the world. Mm-hmm. And as somebody who wants to be an informed voter, regardless of whether I'm a journalist, mm-hmm. it is doggone frustrating.
Sure it is. I mean, really, it is. And oftentimes, the incumbent has the advantage.
Absolutely.
Because they know the history, the background, and they can talk forever about it. And
or they have a district drawn to their strengths, and they
go.
Can sit on their thumbs for 6 months, and they know they're going to get reelected.
Once again, the candidate picks the voters. But, you know, the debates that I've been involved with, when we open it up to the public, you can hear the crickets chirping. They don't ask questions. And again, I think it gets back to that personal comfort zone. They don't want to sound foolish. They don't want to – because the quickest way to quiet up a room is not to whistle and raise your hand in the air. It's to turn on a camera.
Sure.
Or hold a microphone under somebody's chin. And they just get very shy about it. So I back in those freewheeling days where, you know, you'd stand on a stump and that there were no restrictions to the debate except for physical contact, you know. I mean, it would have been interesting to be an elected guy in those days, just to see how those would work. But nowadays, I think that I just think there's a degree of reluctance on the part of the citizenry to engage in that kind of conversation. And then I also wonder whether or not.
Well, I think the citizens are rightfully perhaps skeptical, and I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it here. But I promise you, I'm going to engage you and all the other mayors on this over the next 12 months because. I want to make this happen, and I want there to be a really good substantive debate. And as somebody who's interested in voting, and I know you are too, mm-hmm. we're going to try and have this. So thanks very much. Let's do it again in a month.
I'll be here.
And do join us next week for our talk with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. This has been Ask the Mayor.